Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal, and we are brought to you weekly by AllAccessMMA.com. Check out AllAccessMMA.com for our video podcast. Ed, busy week last week, and we got a busy week to jump into this week. Anything you got to say before we get into this madness?
I mean, we're going later because of trying to prep for this whole... This is, I do have one thing to say. I was thinking it all day when we were talking about recording tonight. Do you remember, it wasn't that long ago, we were like talking about how we were hard up for stuff to watch because of the pandemic. And then we talk about, you know, there's the times when, you know, it was just one thing a week or one or two events a week. And now like I'm on my, I don't know how many times I've had to have two screens going for a fight night or fight nights. And this week, I mean, I'm sort of happy that we've got consecutive nights, but it's still a lot.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're missing a ton, but we're going to obviously jump on as many of the big things as possible. Yeah, no, it's funny you say that because we had weeks where we were trying to figure out what we could talk about, you know, because there was no event for, we were looking for a UFC event every, you know, couple, you know, month and a half when we could get one back then during the earlier days of the flattening the curve. But, yeah, so let's jump right into it then. Last week we started off. Let's start off with the PFL playoffs, and really the fight that we're going to talk about is Ray Cooper III versus Rory McDonald. We didn't have a chance to do picks and talk about much about this fight, and I don't know who you had lined up for that fight going in, but I'm kind of glad that I didn't get a chance to give my opinion on it,
because embarrass ourselves.
It would have been pretty bad. Yeah,
I mean, we did do picks for the Bellator event, but for this one, you're right, we didn't really look at it. But one thing I got to say is, Ray Cooper, I happened to be at the Garden when he won the 2019 championship. I actually sat right in front of him. Did I download that picture? It'll take too long for me to put it on this stream, but it's been used in articles at My MMA News when I wrote the article on My MMA News. And back then, because if you remember back then, that's when Rory McDonald signed with the PFL. And that night, even though he just won $1 million and the title for 2019, he was already saying, I want to fight him first. Like, I want to fight Rory McDonald. So he's had his sights set on Rory McDonald for 2 years. When you think about it, because they had to sit out 2020. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a culmination of what we saw. Another thing I wanted to say was, I mean, and I'm curious to your opinion about this, because, you know, Ray Cooper is a PFL, like, you know, they picked him up from the scratch and they brought, you know, they're bringing in all these UFC and Bellator, you know, Rory came from Bellator, Pettis from the UFC and a couple of other fighters, you know, Clay Collard came from boxing to MMA to the PFL, and all these fighters that were like, because of where they came from, they were like favored to do well. Here we are at the playoffs, and we just had the first playoffs and they're out. So I just feel like the PFL, the sense of urgency with the PFL athletes to have this thing figured out is carrying them over well than guys that came over from what we're used to. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job of picking and choosing the guys to bring over, not necessarily because it's worked out with who they brought over, but it's helped bring eyes to their events where their kind of self-made guys have thrived in mm-hmm. a sense. Now, we saw Collard beat Pettis. It is really how we were introduced to Pettis to PFL. But I probably underestimated Ray Cooper. I know he won last season. That they had, and he's on a win streak now, and he had a tough stretch where he had a loss to who he's going to rematch now, Magomed Karimov. He gets to fight him again, but he had lost to him. He had lost mm-hmm. to Doomsday Howard. He had a draw with Sai, and he kind of looked like but he's rebounded now, 5 wins in a row, dominant fashion, knocking people out, submitting people, grinding out, you know, borderline legends of the sport, and Rory McDonald. So I think it's I can't really say anything bad about the dude. I think he's quickly becoming must see TV. where I know a lot of people who followed PFL would have said that that was the case from day one. Mm-hmm. I think now you start to get, you know, some of the outside eyes that, you know, that you, I'm going to tune in to watch it. Generally, you're going to tune in and watch it. I watched every one of his fights, but as far as me talking about with friends and me talking about in public, what's going on now, I got a name that people are starting to see. This Rory McDonald win obviously opened up a lot of people's eyes because it was dominant. I thought Rory McDonald was going to do to him what he did to Rory McDonald. And, I'm living in rosy glasses of Rory McDonald past. And, I think unfortunately, as I, when I was doing some prep for the show, I saw Nolan King on some of
his, yeah, I was going to bring that up,
like, mentioning that, that, you know, he's kind of on his third wind right now. And, it you know, each wind has kind of got, you know, his first wind was super strong. Then he had the second wind after the battles with Lawler. And then he, you know, then he suffered the losses to Lima and Mousasi. And we kind of thought he was going to make a third run here in PFL. At least I did. And that seems to be coming to an end. I mean, the Lyson Tibu loss was a joke. But it just seemed like he wasn't in it. He didn't seem like it just didn't seem like the psycho killer Rory McDonald that had made him famous.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on what the thing that you're talking about that Nolan said on the spinning back click over at MMA Junkie, for folks that listen to this podcast or watch a podcast, Nolan's king of MMA Junkie's been on here a couple of times to talk the fight game with us, but I agree with him wholeheartedly when it talks because we saw shadows or hints of. I don't want to say there's the skills not there because I'm sure Rory McDonald will wax a lot of dudes still, but it just seems like there's not that whatever fire it was necessary. It's not there. I mean, that was kind of, I think that's kind of why we saw Bellator lose interest in him as because he started talking about it publicly. I mean, I think that just didn't help him out with those negotiations. And I mean, this was a shot at a million and he seemed favored to win, but if you're not into it, then you're not into it. I mean, we could segue to Bellator off of this because of it just reminds me of what Gegard Mousasi told me when he talked about, we mentioned it last week. Gegard Mousasi flat out told me, and I asked him before we recorded last week at the Bellator media day when I zoomed in via Zoom, if you're in the mood to fight, and he said he was, and you know, we saw the results of that with Bellator 264. But going back to Rory, I mean, it's the I think we're just, that's proof of where your heart is. If it's not in the league that you signed up for, then that's what we saw. I mean, not to take anything away from Ray Cooper, of course, just like you said.
No, he fought great. And the Rory thing might just be physical more than even mental at this point. His body might just not be, it's taken the wars. Yeah. I mean, you know, and he'll go down in history as one of the more exciting, just young superstars that this sport ever saw during his run. But, you know, you can only fight so many guys, and just going up in weight to fight guys like, Mousasi and stuff might be a lesson to be learned by that. You know, we'll see how Adesanya's career unfolds through the next couple of years, you know, but, you know, Błachowicz didn't give him the same kind of beating that Mousasi gave. But when you go up in weight and you get beat like that, and, you know, I don't know, but we'll see. That might, you know, maybe he'll rally and win some fights in a row. And like you said, if he stays, you know, if he's fighting on the undercards of these events, he's cleaning the house with most of the competition. But if you're going to start talking guys that are legitimately now maybe moving into the top 10 worldwide ranking of the sport, he just seems to be more on the outside. So we'll wrap up that event. Ray Cooper wins. Megomed Karimov wins. They're set up for an October final rematch from the first tournament season of PFL. So great fight. Clay Collard suffered a kind of a BS decision loss on the card, if anybody were to go back and look at that. So kind of bad luck for Collard, but the Megomed Karimov and Cooper fight definitely would be something to look forward to come October and the final for the welterweight division. You mentioned the Bellator event. Why don't we just transfer right over there to Mousasi versus Salter? We saw that also last Friday night. And really, before we get to the main event, the fight that I know you were raving about online and one of the fights that we talked about going in, I picked the Megamedov to win the fight, but Refian Stotts, right off the bat, both of them put on a fight of the year candidate. Maybe not a fight of the year because it wasn't the blood gore that then generally is going to kind of win those things, but more of like the Tokoro LC Davis, just a great MMA fight. I see the smile on your face there because I knew that would get there. But yeah, that's what I mean. That was what MMA was all about. It's not about the cuts and the blood and the gore and everything. It's about position changes. It's about two guys at the top of the game, not giving each other an inch, and both guys, pushing it to the limit. And the right guy won the fight. Stotts won the fight. He should have won the fight, in my opinion. But Megamed. Medoff put up. I mean, it was just a fun fight to watch. And
yeah,
I mean, I know you were going crazy about it on Twitter, so I'm sure you have nothing but great things to say.
Yeah, the just the back and forth between the two of them. I mean, if there was any sort of feeling out, it only happened maybe in the beginning of round one, because I think the things that came out of this outside of, I mean, I've known about Stotts for a while. I've watched him come, rise up when he fought in the regionals and stuff, and fighting in Bellator. Is this fight, his wrestling, I don't think I've ever seen. I don't even want to say if it's right. His wrestling is good. That's his base. That's his bread and butter. But to me, it was more like his MMA, his counter to MMA wrestling, that Dagestani wrestling style. Cause even when he got taken down, that step over he did in like round two or three, I think it was round two when he did that step over off of a butterfly hooks. It's kind of like an elevator hook, but he literally kind of just like, it was almost like a capoeira like kick, but he just used it to step over. And then he was on mount. But the defining moment of that fight for me was at round three, at the end of round three, he has Magomedov's back and he's going for the rear naked choke. I don't even remember how Magomedov reversed the position to wind up on Stotts' back for him to try to go for the choke. But I mean, I think the judges got it right just because of Stotts had answers for everything Magomedov gave him. And for those that want to argue, but they took each other's back and Magomedov was last, the one that came closer to finishing was Stotts. He talked in the post-fight press conference. He talked about, I talked about this on the Sunday submission thing I do. I can't really do it with my headphone on. The one-handed choke, you have to grab the back of your own head. But I tweeted about it. I don't think the gloves would allow for that to happen. He was so close to it, though, because his hand was all the way around, and we all saw Magomedov's face changing color. Mm-hmm. He said in the post-fight press conference that he was gurgling and, all the noises that come when someone's fighting off of a choke. And he said, I got to go back to my coaches. But that's the answer. Was that one, the choke, behind your own head, and you kind of just straighten your back up, and that closes out to get the same effect as if you were doing rear naked choke. Magomedov doing the right defense, but the thing of it is, the thing that was so annoying about it for me watching is because he was trying to push down or push off the left hook of Stotts, and that's why Stotts was able to sink in so deep, because he had a hand down. He wasn't fighting the hand, so he was worried so much about getting the hook off instead of defending the choke. And the perfect example is right after that, Stotts had his back taken, and if you watch, Stotts does nothing but defend the choke. He doesn't even address the hooks. Uh-huh. Plus, he also saw that was like the time running out towards the end of the round. So I was just like, I mean, that fight, and I know I said I was going to mention it. I just deleted the email, but Glossner, Sebastian, I wrote it down. Sebastian Ruiz versus Glossner. Glossner won the fight via decision, but that was another back and forth. It was almost like the precursor to this fight. It was like a preview of what, like if someone was going to act out what you were going to see in the main card, like that was the fight right there. So, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I know we have more to talk about, but before we continue, I just got to say, this has to be my favorite Bellator card of the entire year. I know you were at one live, so that might change your decision because you were at the Staples Center, right? It was the Staples?
No, the Forum.
The Forum, sorry. You're at the Forum with the AJ McKee. That's pretty monumental too. But as far as some bald bag sitting at home watching on his TV, that brought me back, which is why I wrote about the LC Davis Tokoro thing in my newsletter, because it reminded me of how much I used to always like watching the 135ers in Bellator fight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the McKee Pitbull fight magnitude for that fight itself was being there was hard to beat, and even you know that fight magnitude was huge. Mm-hmm. This fight, this card didn't carry that weight as far as the meaning of a fight, but the main card, especially on here, was better than the main card from 263. So that's just how it worked out. Even the McKee fight wasn't a great fight. It was just it ended brutally and with the crowd and all that was what brought the atmosphere for that fight. This fight card was solid. I'd have to look back to say if it was my favorite, but it was up there. And some of that had to do with how great the Stotts fight was. And then we moved right into a couple of my favorite fighters, really. Andrei Korshkov returns to Bellator, former champ there, moves to 24-4, dominant decision win over Sabat Hamasi, who tough as nails, but, I think I kind of mentioned it kind of felt like it was just kind of more of a stepping stone fight for Korshkov to get him back in the mix. And,
I'm glad you brought that up because they released the rankings today.
Oh, there you go.
And I was paying attention so much to the 135 rankings. Cause I wanted to see how far Stotts went up. I want to see it cause Korshkov wasn't ranked and then he should be,
he's gotta be at least 3, 4, or 5.
He's 8.
Well, that's weird. Can you bring it up on the screen? Or can you tell me who's ahead of him?
Actually, I can bring it up. Let me bring up the let me bring that up.
Yeah, because I can't think of 7 other welterweights off the top of my head that are better.
Well, I mean, Hamasi was 10. If I'm remembering correctly, Hamasi was 10.
Correct, and I don't think you jump necessarily off the win off Hamasi like that, but had Korshkov been active in Bellator, I can't imagine him falling lower than 5.
All right, let's remove this. we'll bring that up later. That's a bracket for when we get into this one. So this is on Bellator.com under their news section. They just announced these today. Add this to the stream. There we go.
All right. So
here's Korshkov right here.
All right. So the welterweight rates: Amosov champion Lima makes sense. Paige fine. Jason Jackson fine. Neiman Gracie, Logan Storey, Derek Anderson, Paul Daly, Andrei Korshkov. There's no way in any world, as much as I love Paul Daly and like Derek Anderson, that Korshkov should be ranked behind both of those guys.
Especially since he's been fighting at 175 Daly.
Yeah, that's even a better point. And how about the fact that, you know, again, I'm not looking to badmouth any of these guys because they're all freaking killers. But if my rankings, I'd put Korshkov at 4 behind Jason Jackson. If I was doing it, he'd be my 4th ranked fighter. Mm. I'd be setting up a fight with Neiman Gracie or Jackson if he wins. Logan Storley fights this this upcoming weekend. So possibly with the schedules working out, if he able to get a win there, maybe that's something you set up for Korshkov. But yeah, I'm surprised at that ranking. And then I'm looking at the rankings now for middleweight, which brings us to the main event where we saw Gegard Mousasi and John Salter. Austin Vanderfort was in the house, working the table with the commentary guys, and he looks like he's now the number one contender to face Gegard Mousasi, who was successful with a 3rd round finish over John Salter after being held down and losing basically the 1st round. He came back. Showed the poise that Gegard Mousasi has always showed and was able to finish his opponent.
You know, what was weird about that in the post-fight press conference, he actually said, he was like, I could have gotten up if I wanted to, but you know, he felt it would have been more tactful. I don't remember his words exactly, but it was more, obviously it paid off to make Salter kind of like exhaust himself with everything he was trying, because we saw, you know, Mousasi eventually, not only was he on top when he finished him, but I mean, I don't know if it was my TV, by the way, but for you, did it sound like those shots from Mousasi on the ground seem loud? I mean, there was fans in that arena too.
Oh yeah. He carries heavy punches. I was early in his career. I was ringside when he fought Babalu and Sokaju, and he for Strikeforce, and he, same kind of thing, you know, not mounted ground and pound, but, you know, standing over the guys and just beat the living hell out of them. And dude, he knows how to throw that punch, mm-hmm. even his jab and everything. I think it was your boy John McCarthy was mentioning that. And, you know, he knows how to use his energy as good as any fighter really that's probably ever walked this planet. But at the same time, that's what's led to some of the lackadaisical fights, I think, where he's gotten comfortable in fights. And in the past, he might have settled to be taken down again, you know, another time or two. He did mention that there was no reason to 5-round fight. Giving away run round for him wasn't a concern. He knew he'd have the better gas tank, and he started landing some of those elbows. Actually, at the end of the first round, I think what really turned the tide was knees to the body. Salter mm-hmm. was trying to take him down, and the announcers really didn't pick up on it as much as I thought they should have. But to me, and if I watch it again, I think Musashi drops him 2 or 3 times with knees. Now, when I say drop him, he goes from being taken down to Salter fell down, went down to a knee, and you generally wouldn't drop down to a knee to try to complete the takedown he was doing. So I think that really kind of, you know, not to play on words, but gutted him and caused, and I think that really hurt his gas tank, because by halfway through round two, I think it started to appear to be just a matter of time, barring a kind of a fluky shot, that Musashi was going to pick up the win and prove that he is as good as we've all thought he was, and you know, really where he stands in this division. Now, with that said, Austin Vanderfort's a hell of a challenge for him. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we obviously are going to be months probably away still from picking that fight.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick just right now, I would have a hard time not picking Vanderfort. Seeing that, knowing that Musashi can be taken down, and seeing how good Vanderfort has been on the ground, and how good his wrestling and control has been.
He's just tough. Like,
he's just tough. Both the guys are tough durable. As nails, but yeah. I mean, yeah, it's two incredibly durable fighters. I'm just wondering if he has the style that historically has caused Musashi some issues. So I don't know. I'll have to look forward, see how it goes, see how they're training, how the weight cuts for everybody end up going when that fight comes.
Well, you mentioned it, so you had to see it. But, you know, obviously there's an injury that Vanderfort is nursing. So it's going to be a while. Anyway, despite the fact that Musashi just fought, you have that too, that we got to wait and see what's going to happen there.
But also looking at the ratings, who else? There's not like a fight on that division that Musashi should take it to wait for him, right? Like, who, I mean, you want to sell a fight? There's not a whole lot. I mean, he hasn't fought, you know, Van Steins or this, you know, I don't even know who Johnny Elblin is. But he might have to look to another weight class or somebody maybe coming up to fight him.
But I mean, just to go back to the thing about the 135ers, look at these dudes.
The 35 pound division in Bellator is now.
It's look at this. Yeah. It's all murderers.
Yeah. No, it's.
I mean, people want to talk junk about Gallagher, but he's not 11-1 because he sucks. You know what I mean?
And his only loss is to, yeah. He's fought only the best.
I mean, this is just, it's always been like that for me. I mean, but yeah. So these are the updated rankings up at Bellator.com if you want to check them out for yourself. Really quick, where's the heavyweight?
Top right there. So yeah, and then that, you know, we can, yeah. So we might as well we got it up here. We might as well jump to this weekend's Bellator card, because it's kind of highlighted off of your heavyweight ranking right there. The main event, mm-hmm. Czech Congo fights Sergey Karatanov, who is not ranked, but it might be because he hasn't fought in the last year in Bellator is what I would guess.
I was going to say, where did he fight? Didn't he just fight somewhere else?
Yeah, he's had some outside fights, and he's had he's had a couple boxing matches. You know, he constantly keeping busy, but yeah, I mean, it's the constant, you know, two longtime pros now in Congo. Mm-hmm. And, he's coming off a boxing win. And then he fought, he had MMA win over Ollie Thompson, another boxing win. And
so yeah, if he gets a win over Congo, who's ranked number 3, then he's in the rankings.
Yes, and he may even be in the rankings with a loss, depending on how the fight goes, to be honest. Just seeing the lower end of the heavyweight division. But with that said, I mean, on paper, with the way we know these fighters, you would expect this to be a stand-up bang-out fight with likely Congo's chin getting checked and him getting knocked out. Unfortunately, the reality is Chet Congo is more of a wrestler in the majority of his MMA fights that he wins. And that's Karatanov's weakness, as his last loss was to Linton Vassell, who just who took him down continuously.
Looks like fans got Karatanov winning based on the vote, because you can vote on the Bellator website now.
Yeah, so. I mean, I don't want to pick against him, but I see Congo going for a takedown, and if he gets Karatanov down, I think that that's really bad news for Sergey. Mm-hmm. I like I said, what Vassell did to him. And that's the only guy in recent memory, but I just feel like that Congo's a big damn dude, big strong dude, and if he gets down on top of you, a lot of people have had trouble getting up. In fact, I can't think of many that have. His elbows are usually pretty nasty, so I can see that happening in a perfect world. Karatanov, and they go out there swinging, and somebody's head flies off. You know, that's what that fight is signed for. Mm-hmm. But Congo never gives you what you want. I hate to say it. It's just true, you know?
Yeah.
He gets these fights and you go, oh man, this is going to be a great fight. And then at the end of the night, it's him laying on a guy for three rounds, dropping some elbows. And
The
crowd booing.
I can't disagree with you. This fight should be fun too. I like watching Adam Borick's fight, and JJ Wilson is undefeated.
I think the fans are heavily swayed there off of knowing Borick's more. Yeah. JJ Wilson's another prime example. We mentioned he wasn't a name we threw out there when we were talking about the AJ McKees and stuff, and he wasn't brought in with that kind of fanfare, but he's 8-0, all seven of his eight wins in Bellator. His debut was in Bellator. He had an off fight where he fought for California Cage Warriors, which is basically I want a $300 paycheck to beat the garbage man this weekend, so let's add that on the card, the record. But other than that, I mean, it's a great fight, and it's going to determine really who's the next threat. Borix has more to lose. Wilson has more to gain, I feel like, in this fight. A win by Wilson here catapults him into that level where he's only fighting guys like Borix and higher ranked. But I think that's a banger fight, and
It's going
to
be fun.
You know, I tough fight to pick. I like both guys. I've probably seen JJ Wilson fight live five or six times. You know, he fights on a lot of the LA cards, and he, from being a prelim fighter where you didn't really pay attention, to realizing all of a sudden he's 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, and now 8-0 with a featured co-main event fight.
Yeah. And speaking of fights to keep that could be undergoing, not if you're watching Bellator social, but because they've been putting out Logan Storley's highlights this week, as we're only two on Tuesday, but he's facing Dante Shiro. I mean, the 98% on the website here said everyone seems to be leaning towards Logan Storley. I can't disagree with that, because I mean, the dude's wrestling is definitely a problem for anybody he fights. So
he's 11-1. His only loss is a split decision to the current champion.
Yeah.
I think this fight's probably set up for him to pick up a win, get back on the track, and then, like I said, maybe a fight with him and Koreshkov is something in the works, with considering that they will have wins only a week apart to line the schedule up going to the latter, the fall.
Oh, by the way, I mean, you keep mentioning Koreshkov. I meant to say something when we were talking about him. In the post-fight press conference, somebody asked about Shlemenko being on that Moscow car. And it looks like that's closer and closer to happening based on Scott Coker's reaction. So, I mean, it might be your favorite card of the year when that card happens.
Between Minnikov and Fedor already on the card. It's working its way there. And with all the other names, I'm surprised they don't have Nemkov on the card. I'm surprised Nemkov's fighting in Arizona within a week before. So,
yeah.
kind of strange, but also...
There's lots of other fights on here to keep an eye out for. I mean, the Bellator prelims have been interesting lately. Like I said, I mentioned the Glossner-Ruiz fight from the last event. So make sure there's a couple of fighters you might recognize on here. This fight is actually off. They have to update the website. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the reasons, but Baby Slice and this fight was removed from there. So But it should be fun. Should be a fun Bellator event. But we only jumped to that Friday because it was up on the screen. We got to bring up. We still have to look at this Thursday night, the day before this one, PFL playoffs. I'm going to bring up the bracket because it was already up because Matt and I were confused about what portion, who on the card is fighting for in the brackets and who's there just as featured fights. So luckily the PFL's website and graphics team cleared that up for us quickly. So we're going to bring that up so we can look at. It looks like this portion is going to be what's featured on the ESPN. Everyone can watch broadcasts.
Yeah, so this is Thursday night again. Last week's event was on Friday. This one jumps back to Thursday. And, you know, some of these names here I'm not strongest with. But you got Goldsoff and Delijah on one side of the heavyweight bracket. And Capoloza and Jones on the upper side of the men's heavyweight bracket. You know, I think I think, you know, they brought Verdun in, I think, for this tournament. They, you know, and I think, you know, they brought in Roy McDonald, they brought in Pettis, they brought in all these guys, and I think maybe the heavyweight division might be one of the ones that could end up being kind of a disappointment. But we'll see how it unfolds. You know, these tournaments are cool, but it also can potentially an upset here or there, a bad judge's decision here or there, can change the history of
which is probably why they're not coming back to Jersey.
Well, that, yeah, exactly. That might be why they're in Florida, yeah. And then they're staking in Florida through October. Yeah. That's the game plan.
Yeah, so yeah. Hard Rock, because a hotel in Seminole Casino in Tampa, mm-hmm. wherever it is. I forget where it is.
Hollywood Casino or Hollywood, Florida. Yeah, and then Pacheco and Guardado on the women's bracket, and then really the fight, the 2 seed versus the 3 seed, but you know, because of how it's done for the seeding mm-hmm. times and rounds and win. Harrison is actually Kyla Harrison's actually the number 2 seed. She fights Jenna Fabian in the what is the main event, the final fight of the mm-hmm. card. You know, I the 155 pound women's division hasn't proven to really be a showstopper. They've tried to move some people up from smaller weight classes to fight her. She's already got a win over Pacheco.
This fight was supposed to happen, I feel like, in 2018 or 2019. So I'm glad that hopefully nothing stops it from happening, because I forget who, when Harrison, she was supposed to fight Jenna Fabian. I'm sorry, I keep messing up her name. That whole mix, that whole media thing that, when Harrison called out that dude, got me all messed up, because she corrected the dude on his name, and now I have 3 versions of her name in my head.
Mm-hmm, but, I know, the same thing.
So, but I feel like this was a fight we were supposed to get in 2019 that we didn't get, so I'm really looking forward to it. Hard to pick against Harrison in the PFL at this weight class where it's the only, you know, place where it exists. Not to take away, we've already seen her cut to down to 145 and do well too. But the thing about Fabian is she trains with Israel Adesanya and all those guys at City Kickboxing. So I'm wondering if this fight is going to be tougher for Harrison than any other competition she's faced. Because not for nothing, do we want to see her wipe the floor with Pacheco again? Because it's already happened like twice already. I forget.
Yeah, it seems like twice. I think it is twice now you say mm-hmm. that. I don't know. I'll watch it because it's Harrison, and we've kind of all joined her career.
I like her. Yeah,
day one. She seems like a great person, and she dominates her fights. I just wonder, you know, like had Ronda Rousey fart. I'm all over the place today. If Rousey had fought, you know, coming off the Olympics at like 155, I feel like she would have been doing the same thing. She did the same thing to younger, smaller women, but it's hard to fight in a division where it really doesn't exist. You know, as much as they can say it's the lightweight division, I mean, we're looking at the top 4 ranked women probably at that weight class. And they're fighting right now only because that's all that there is. You know, I mean, these are the women that won their last fight. So that's mm-hmm. all you can judge it by. I think that they, she needs to get down to 145. If she wants to really, I know we had this conversation about Cyborg and all that, but Cyborg had put together a resume when women's MMA was moving and working its way onto the, to the charts. If all of a sudden it was 2017 and Gina and Cyborg had jumped into 145, we would have been kind of going, what's this, you know? But she had established herself. Harrison jumped into MMA when this division really didn't even exist, the women's 155, kind of created it for her. I would say they definitely created it for her, if I'm being totally honest. I just think that if she wants to have competition, then she needs to drop down at least to 135 or 145. I think that's probably as far as she can go. And people will then, you can actually have legitimate 130 fighter fivers maybe come up and fight her. But as far, I don't see any way she loses. Maybe this will be the toughest competition. Like you said, she's fighting a fighter out of a well-known gym that's had super success lately. But I just wonder, it won't look good for her if Harrison loses this fight. If Harrison loses, then where the hell does she go? I mean, other than rematch the girl that beats her. You know,
I think she has options. I mean, she's already kind of, she's built up enough of a resume here. I think she has options. I saw an interview she did with, MMA Mania, where she kind of hinted at, not really being interested in hanging out with, the PFL for another season. And I think it's because of, she's got things she wants to do. She's got kids now because she's got adopted to her. I forget if it was her sisters or some family member's children. So she's got things that are motivating her that she wants to do more. And we've already the bad thing about the PFL, as much as I love the format and what they bring to the table as far as being a fighters league, is that, you know, they held everybody back when everyone else was going. So, and I think that's one of the reasons too, I definitely think Titan FC wanted her. Invicta definitely wanted her, liked having her around. I know Shannon Knapp is super cool to work with. So I think she's got places to go. You know, Invicta's on Access and they're doing a pay-per-view model now. So I think she's got options.
I mean, she might have Invicta at 145. If she's going to go to UFC or Bellator, she's got to drop down to, or 155. She's got to drop to 145 if she's going to. And the UFC is not even acknowledging 145 really anymore. And she's friends with Nunes, so the UFC is not much of an option. Bellator, there is an option. If she goes down to 145, she's got some really good fights between Blencow, Cyborg. You know, you got four or five good fights there. Invicta will put her on, and they'll get her opponents. But I think if she really wants to, like, when the story's written, be known as like,
yeah, the competition she wants. Yeah, you're right.
I think Bellator's got to be her next stop, and it's got to be at 145, or maybe a mega super fight with Cyborg at like 150. Maybe you work something out, and I don't know,
dude. They've that question has come up. They've I don't know why, you know, dealing with the media members that she has to deal with that ask her these ridiculous questions that have nothing to do with where the fight in front of her, or where she's at. You know how many times they've asked her about fighting Amanda Nunes and fighting Cyborg when she's signed with the PFL and about to fight for a PFL title. Like that's, it's come up enough that it could definitely be marketed because these guys have asked enough about, you know, fighting Cyborg or Nunes, which it's just like, you know, she's a competitor. She's an Olympian.
I'm sure she wants to do it. And she's taking the correct road. I have no doubt that the way she's building up her name is going to get her paid a lot more money than it had she just jumped into Bellator or the UFC. She's doing the Overeem, you know, the let's just win somewhere else, build a name, come over, I get a mega contract, you know, right off the bat. So she's doing a great job of that, and she needs experience. There's no reason for her to jump into the water with sharks right now. I think Nunes and Cyborg would probably both give her I think Nunes probably beats her badly right now. And I think Cyborg, unless she can take Cyborg down and not get tired, she's going to have a hell of a run there. So I think she's doing the correct way to build her way to the top. I just think if she wins this tournament, the next move has to be losing that extra 10 pounds and going into where you can fight name opponents that are going to get you, that's going to really move you up the lifetime women's fighting rankings. Cause that's really where we're at right now. There's 10 women in the history of the sport that we talk about, you know, that when it comes to the historical ranking of the sport, and she's really not that far from jumping into that list. If she gets a win over one of those bigger names, that's just going to be in Bellator basically at this point, or the UFC, you know, or UFC. There's like
definitely but you're right about that. As far as fights for her, Bellator's got a lot of them. I mean, there was talk of when they asked that after the last event, they asked about, you know, because Rafael Stotts wants that bantamweight tournament. I'm all in for that, but I know the Coker had wanted to do a women's tournament. I forget for which weight class, but I know there was one that he wanted to do before COVID hit, and obviously now they're you know, plans change because of it. But yeah, it's definitely something that if she after this season, if she wants to, let's say she wins this title, she's got $2 million in her pocket. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of chips to bargain with. But you know, the fight with this is not a, I don't think this fight's going to be a pushover fight. I think it's going to be pretty rough.
No, I hope she has. I hope she gets pushed. She needs that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she wants that too. So
I have no doubt that she wants that. She, like you said, she's a competitor. You don't get to that level without wanting that. But I think that she needs it in order to. You got to face some kind of controversy or some kind of, you know, you got to have some struggle in a fight if you got to. In my opinion, from an outsider looking in, you got to have a little bit of a struggle to make that next step to, okay, I survived that. I know I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, because no matter how strong of a person you are, I think it's got to be in the back of your mind. Like, what's going to happen if some girl gets my back and has the choke sunk in, you know, until you get a fight out of that? I think that that's got to be something there. And I'm not saying that she's thinking about that, but it just, to me, it's just part of the fighter's progression that they evolved. Yeah,
through definitely going to be like a striker versus grappler type of fight, though, because I think that's obviously Fabian coming from City Kickboxing. She's probably going to do the, you try to use her reach and not let Harrison close the cage and put her against it and take her down.
Because she definitely had height. She's definitely got
inches
in height on her. So it will be interesting to see how that unfolds. So that's this Thursday night. We talked about Bellator, which is on Friday, and then that jumps us to the final. Well, not the final, but the next the next event of the weekend, UFC Fight Night Cannoneer versus Gastelum. The I don't know what your thought on the main event is. I know Jared Cannoneer has been a fighter that you've been, I think it's fair to say, a fan of.
Yeah, no, I like him.
Yeah, and somebody you've definitely taking the side of, as we've talked about his fights over the last couple of years. He fights Kelvin Gastelum, former title contender, former Ultimate Fighter winner. But he's one in 4 in his last 5, although all to killers.
He's
1-4, but like I said, all to, you know, top 5 competition. Cannoneer, on the other hand, is coming off a loss to Whitaker, but prior to that, he had, you know, taken out Hermanson Silva and David Branch. That's when he kind of came out in this weight class after that win at UFC 230 in your neck of the woods there in New York. It's hard for me to go against the kind of the guy who seems to be improving, and I don't necessarily know how. I guess I see this fight just being a stand-up battle. And Gastelum is known for landing that big punch, but I'm just going to pick Cannoneer to win.
I mean, I know we're not going to do picks for the whole card. We were just going to bring up some certain fights and know and look at it, but I'm just bringing up the main one because we're talking about the main event here. Like you said, I'm a fan of both guys. This is a hard one for me to pick. I might have to. I mean, I feel like the best Kelvin Gastelum, he left the best of himself when he fought that fight with Adesanya.
I think so too. And I think if it was the best against the best, I think Gastelum would win the fight. But I don't know what the best of Kelvin Gastelum is anymore. And maybe this fight will reinvigorate that, you know, what we think about him. But yeah, I that's where I'm kind of the same spot. I don't know where he's at.
Yeah. So, oh, well, I mean, Clay Guida and this, Mark Madsen, I know there's a couple of fights to note on here. I'm not going to make any picks on that one, but Chase Sherman and this Parker Porter fight, Vince Pichel versus Austin Hubbard, and our boy here, Brandon Royval, makes his comeback after his shoulder injury against Alexander Pantoja. So he's still in there for the flyweights, trying to make his way up the ladder and do some damage. I'm looking forward to that one. Of course, as a former guest of the podcast, I'm not going to pick against Royval on that one. So we'll leave.
No,
that.
But that's a hell of a fight right there.
Yeah, yeah.
That has fight of the night written all over it.
Yeah.
Between those guys. But yeah, I mean, Chase Sherman back at heavyweight. He's kind of been all over the place between bare knuckle and bouncing back to the UFC. And you still there, Ed?
Yeah, I just got to switch my camera.
All good. And then the co-main event, Mark Madsen, undefeated, fights the all-time, not all-time anything, but a guy who's all-time entertainer, let's say, in Clay Guida in the co-main event. Madsen, you know, I know you're not going to make bridge picks, but Madsen, the Olympic wrestler, I think he smothers Guida and does his thing to continue his undefeated streak. But, you know, I think the main event, you know, looking at the card, I think the Royval Pantoja fight and then the main event to me are the two that stand out that could be the two fight of the night, you know, just bleed fights of the night. The Pantoja Royval has a chance to be some really strategic grappling.
I hope the injury doesn't change the way Royval fights. I know he was doing some interviews. I wish we could have gotten him back on this podcast to talk about this fight, but I forgot how we set that up anyway. I think that might have been through All Access, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I think he has a history of that shoulder coming out is what the story was. So I don't think it's going to be a psychological thing. I think it's just going to be something where you hope it doesn't pop out again.
Yeah.
There's a baseball player right now for the Padres, Fernando Tatis, who has the same thing where he's had his shoulder dislocate twice this year and he has a history of it.
And I forget who had it happen in boxing a lot. I want to say it was Diego Corrales. I'm thinking boxing back when boxing was fun. Uh-huh.
Come on. You're not looking forward to Tito versus Anderson. And I know I'm contemplating tickets right now, which is wild, but
hey, no, man, you go do what you got to do, man. Cause it's not for nothing. My summer has been ass.
Yeah, so no, I know. It's hard to pass up the opportunity. I mean, I never got to see De La Hoya box in his prime, and obviously this is not his prime, but just the idea of going to an event with, you know, De La Hoya, Vitor Belfort, Anderson Silva, and Tito Ortiz is just kind of...
I feel like that's going to get pulled before it happens.
That's kind of what I'm concerned about. More. That's honestly what I'm concerned about more than anything.
Yeah.
But we'll shall see. That's what we wanted to talk about. So that's UFC, and then we'll wrap up right now mentioning the BKFC 20 card also on Friday. So this brings us back a day, but, you know, my God, what a stacked week of action. Johnny Bedford, Reggie Barnett Jr. Square off in the main event for the bantamweight title. This is a rematch from when Bedford won the title from him. The first time they fought, actually the final of a tournament, and then Dat Nguyen took the title from Bedford, and Dat Nguyen then had contract issues with BKFC and moved on, so the title becomes vacant, and we now get the two. Other than Dat Nguyen, who's no longer there, these are clearly the two top bantamweights in BKFC and should make for a hell of a banger. Co-main event brings in Tony Lopez, who anybody who's followed combat sports at all over the last 2.5 decades at this point probably should know. 47 years old, but has fought in everybody. Had a fight of the year candidate with Joey Beltran at BKFC 1 a couple years back. He fights Alan Belcher. A surprise signing, I would say, at the least.
Did you see they signed Chad Mendez? I saw that. That was official.
Mm-hmm. Chad Mendez
looking
to debut October 22nd at BKFC 22 in Arizona. So,
I don't know how to feel about that.
He's still under contract with the UFC, which is honestly a nice little change of policy almost over there. I imagine they kept him under contract to avoid him going to another MMA organization. But it would be nice to see if even if it's just off fights where they're allowing guys to go to these other promotions.
Well, not for nothing. McGregor, what's the word I'm looking for? McGregor started that with his being able to fight Mayweather, you know, like,
yeah, in a sense.
Now they got to let these guys do. It used to be only grappling, I remember.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I was gonna say they let Burns do a bunch of the grappling stuff. Guys have been able to do grappling events, but
that was always something because they considered it safe and not it wouldn't mess them up for fights and blah blah blah. But now you're looking at, you know, it's later than normal, so. My mind's already going, but
yeah, well, it, you know, if guys are going to retire under contract with the UFC, it doesn't look good from anybody's perspective, in my opinion, for the UFC to hold anybody hostage and not allow them to do anything. If you don't want them to do an MMA fight, that's fine. That's your prerogative. That's the contract you signed. But we got to let, if these guys need to do boxing or bare knuckle boxing or grappling to earn a paycheck and to keep active, when they've basically, you know, I mean, there's so many words Mendes, by relieving the UFC and retiring, is saying, I'm kind of over this, right? I mean, that's basically what you're doing when you retire from the organization or from the sport. So he is an interesting one, though. Man packs a punch. We've always known him kind of as a blanket wrestler who would occasionally hurt people with punches. But he's a little powerhouse man, and he might knock some people silly in BKFC. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. And it's weird though, how BKFC manages to bring in all these guys. We'll see how that ends up, you know, unfolding down the line. But for right now, I mean, I know it's not for everybody. We've said a million times, but I'll definitely be watching it Friday night.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, that's the thing. Everyone always has something to say about BKFC, but when it's on, it's always trending. So
that's a valid point.
You know what too. I mean? Like not for nothing. That's Friday as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So not for nothing. Like, it's Friday. It's probably going to be a little bit later than everybody else that's going on Friday. I guarantee it'll be top trending for combat sports.
Well, yeah, no. And again, it's one of those things where you never know what we could see happen there. I mean, we've seen craziness that even, you know, going back to some of the TikTok BS that they had, you know.
Oh yeah, with the guys fighting in the ring afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Wild West promotion, and some people like that, some people don't. But it's good, like you said, it attracts eyes, and it's going to attract, you know, tweets and views and everything that leads to the trending.
We'll see what, like the thing you said about, we'll see where, you know, what their future holds, because I keep seeing, I mean, there's a lot of influencers or insiders or whatever you want to call it, talking about they might not have money for more events, like, you know, till for next year, whatever. But, you know, that's all people trying to act like they're, you know.
And a lot of people don't want to see him succeed. So you're going to start those kind of that talk and rumors. The bottom line is they're putting on their 20th event, with actually 21 when you consider a Knucklemania event, mm-hmm. you know. And usually these organizations we talk about not having money, usually they don't get to this point a few years in. Usually it's something that that strike, you know, they don't get this far along and not continually adding guys. You wouldn't think that if you had no money, you'd add Chad Mendes. I mean, as much as Chad Mendes might be fun to watch, it's not like you're going to draw a million eyes because Chad Mendes is fighting, you know. I mean, it's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
At least not right now. Maybe down the line, a couple wins and you get an opponent where it all the stars align, then who knows. But anyway, so that's BKFC Friday. Like I said, Thursday PFL, Friday Bellator, BKFC, and Saturday UFC. So four events, 72 hours, and that's without going too deep. If you need more, check out Grabaka Hitman, Kaposa Online.
Oh yeah, there's probably others.
He'll give you the schedule. And, you can watch from Uzbekistan to you know, to Curitiba on streams that he will help you find. So until then though, Ed, we'll have plenty to talk about again next week now with all these results. Check us out at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMA Hawk on Twitter and Instagram. Check out Ed at Carbizol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, Old Head Carb on Twitch. And as always, again, you can check us out at www.allaccessmma.com for our video podcast. Check out our audio podcast anywhere audio podcasts are generally available. Ed, have a great rest of the week, brother. And I like the Pride shirt this week. Last week you had the old school. Is that the Bushido shirt you got on?
This is a Bushido shirt, but it's not a real Pride shirt because I ordered it from the UFC store. I keep my real Pride shirt. And I keep the real one from Japan in a safe place where it doesn't get sunlight on it and stuff, because that is a collector's item.
Awesome. All right, brother. Well, enjoy the rest of the week, and thanks to everybody who listened to the show.
Peace. Hey, guys. Ed here, East Coast side of the Coast to Coast Combat Hour podcast. If you like what we're doing, make sure you subscribe on YouTube and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, if you'd like to help us out and donate, the support links are in any of the podcast descriptions, and some of the links are also provided on our YouTube channel, The Blog Board Jungle. Thanks again for listening. And if you give us some support, we'll give you a shout on the podcast, maybe bring you on for a UFC pay-per-view breakdown or two. Thanks again.